There will always be psychos around, but the current system puts them in positions of power. Robert Oppenheimer and Satoshi Nakamoto, they both used physics to change human incentive structures. Oppenheimer by creating the atomic bomb. Satoshi Nakamoto by coming up with proof of work. So way more productive, way more peaceful way of solving world peace, really, and getting into a stable state of the world than to be in a perpetual Mexican standoff. By its very nature, it's better at relocating resources than the current destructive system that puts decision-making in the hands of politicians that waste resources all the time and build shit that no one asked for. Bitcoin is one of the greenest industries on the planet. It sacrifices energy, maybe, but for the best cause possible, which is absolutely finite money, fruit that doesn't rot, this thing that will make humanity better at allocating resources over time.
But how does proof of work replace armies, nuclear weapons, you know, all of these things?
Down a rabbit hole. Down. Cypherpunk.
Welcome back to another episode of Cypherpunk. Today we're going to talk about energy. Welcome, my friend.
Thank you. Good to be back.
So critics say Bitcoin wastes energy. You say it creates monetary energy. The first loss-free energy network in human history. Who's right?
In the years past, I've become a bit allergic to the word monetary energy because I think it's the wrong framing. However, I'm still of the opinion that Bitcoin does not waste energy at all. It sacrifices energy, maybe. But for the best cause possible, which is absolutely finite money or super sound money, whatever you may call it, this thing that will make humanity better at allocating resources over time. So I think the current system is the wasteful system and not the Bitcoin system, because what the current system does, inflationary money, puts more control in the hands of politicians, and it distorts pricing signals and thereby misallocates resources to places where people don't want resources to go. If we had more control over our own lives and our own money, the money would be spent on things that more people want. It's as simple as that. And also, people tend to forget that fiat money also has a very wasteful consensus mechanism. Bitcoin uses proof of work, which is basically a lot of miners competing to find blocks and getting paid in Bitcoin to do so. Usually described by the mainstream media outlets as solving complicated math problems, but that's not really what a miner does. A miner just guesses a number over and over again. Or guesses a number that is supposed to be below a target number. That is the difficulty at the moment. And whenever he does, the hash of a block is below the difficulty target, then a block is found. The consensus mechanism of fiat currencies is world wars. Whoever wins a world war gets to decide what the world's reserve currency is. And currently it's you guys. Yeah, you won the last one, so you get to price oil, for instance, in dollars. And thereby you can buy all the shit from all the other countries in the world while printing greenbacks over here.
Yeah.
Claiming other people's resources for yourselves.
Are you familiar with the Triffin's Dilemma?
Yeah, but remind me what it is.
So the Triffin's Dilemma is if you have the world reserve currency, you can print money, but it creates a situation that the United States is kind of in right now with this end game, where there's all this discussion about tariffs and all this stuff.
Yeah.
But basically we end up not making anything here at all, which is kind of a problem, because then when there's an emergency, we don't make anything.
No, you sacrifice sustainability. Like the country isn't sustainable because everyone is living off of everyone else in the world. And that's not a good thing. I personally don't believe tariffs is a solution to that, because a tariff will not make an American worker less fat or more productive, like costless.
What do you believe the solution is?
Free markets, Bitcoin, of course. Stop using the dollar and start using Bitcoin instead. And then you have sound money, and then you can make better decisions.
Bitcoin mining as digital warfare. How does proof of work, because we kind of touched on this a little bit, but how does proof of work replace armies, nuclear weapons, you know, all of these things?
Well, it's I made a talk once, I believe it was 2 years ago in Riga, about the similarities between Robert Oppenheimer and Satoshi Nakamoto, because they both used their knowledge about physics and the power of physics to change human incentive structures. Oppenheimer, by creating the atomic bomb, thereby ensuring victory in a world war. So he mastered the consensus protocol of fiat currencies in that sense. He believed that would end all wars because you would be in this perpetual Mexican standoff where the other guy wouldn't attack because that would lead to mutual destruction, and nobody wants that. Except maybe Iran.
maybe. Supposedly.
Because they get 100 virgins when they die. And so. But I guess Oppenheimer didn't think about Iran when he made the bomb. Anyway, Satoshi Nakamoto also found a way to use physics to change human incentive structures by coming up with proof of work, sacrificing energy to create scarce token. And that is, to me, that's a way more productive, way more peaceful way of solving world peace, really, like, and getting into a stable state of the world than to be in a perpetual Mexican standoff, which sounds like a pretty horrible scenario.
I've always been torn because it feels like Oppenheimer has largely been right, you know, in the sense of, like, with when there are countries that all have nukes, like, they don't fight each other. The only countries that are fighting are the other countries that don't have nukes.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, all these little proxy wars and stuff is like, the second that one of these countries gets nukes, you don't see them having any more of those little, they're not involved in those wars anymore. Like Ukraine, for example, you know, they disarmed their nukes and now they're being invaded. And it's an interesting thought experiment, I guess is what I'll say.
Yeah, I don't believe anyone should have nukes, or like the ability to have nukes would go down severely on a Bitcoin standard because money would be in the hands of individuals and violence would be less profitable. So you have no incentive to build nukes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've always thought about, what about that one psycho who just, like, you know, the evil villain? What do you think about that?
Yeah, there will always be psychos around, but the current system puts them in positions of power, and that's what's so dangerous. I mean, the most horrendous crimes ever committed against humanity were all committed by quote-unquote world leaders, people in charge of entire
armies. With Hitler.
Everyone in power, like, I don't believe that any man has the right to rule over another without consent. I just think that's the wrong way of approaching other human beings. And it doesn't matter if you live in a democracy or a dictatorship, it's still wrong to steal. And if you can build a system that disincentivizes stealing, then you're on the right path.
70% of Bitcoin mining potentially uses renewable energy. How do you think about Bitcoin's effect on incentivizing renewable energy?
Yes, this is a wonderful, there are great spokespeople for this particular thing. Daniel Batten, Rachel Gayer, Troy Cross come to mind. They focus on the fact that Bitcoin mining can be used as a sort of suspension mechanism for renewable energy. So you can connect a Bitcoin miner to a solar farm or a wind farm. And whenever that overproduces energy, you can use the excess energy to mine Bitcoin. And the beauty of that, why it's good to mine Bitcoin instead of using the energy for instance, Facebook or YouTube videos or any other big data or AI or any other big data crunching thing, is that Bitcoin doesn't require that much bandwidth. So it can be put in very remote locations, and it needs like 2.5 megabytes every 10 minutes of bandwidth, which is so beautiful because, and it does incentivize renewable energy. And truly renewable energy is renewable energy that is not subsidized by the government. Real sustainable renewable energy. And if you have access to that, so you have basically free energy, there is no reason for you not to install the Bitcoin miner because it's free money. And that's what we see in Bitcoin. Like Bitcoin is one of the greenest industries on the planet. And regardless of whether you think climate change is a real threat or not, or if it has to do with human behavior or not, this is a path to a more environmentally friendly type of money. And you can even imagine a wind farm or a solar farm being built not for the community, but to mine Bitcoin. And whatever it, whenever the community next to it needs some extra energy, you sacrifice some of that to the community. And you have the miners running at all times. And then you have a very stable grid. If you like flip the equation and think of Bitcoin mining not as the suspension mechanism for extra when they overproduce, but if you think about it, that's the main thing. And whenever it's super cold or something, and the society next to it needs extra energy, you just turn the miners off and send the or some of the miners off and send the energy there. So
we've seen a lot of that in Africa right now, especially.
Yeah, it's a beautiful, and it's kind of hard to deny for leftards all over the world and environmentalists that the Bitcoin mining is doing great stuff.
It's really Africa. Unbelievable, but like there's so many environmentalists that are complaining and doing this stuff. It just blows my mind. I mean, why do you think that is?
Few things on Earth are as bad for the environment as environmentalists that haven't done the maths.
Yeah, it's like they're burning down Tesla dealerships now. Like that just blew my mind. Like it is unbelievable. It's like the and one company that's actually done more for the environment.
And they cheer for Elon whenever he does stupid shit, and they bash Elon whenever he does good shit. So I'm always on the opposite side of the Elon bashing. So, and there's a lot to be said about this subject. For instance, I used to be very, very pro-nuclear because nuclear is, from a physics perspective, it's by far the most reliable and the least wasteful type of energy production that we have. But from a democracy perspective, it's not, because sooner or later you're going to have some goddamn hippies destroy the whole thing. So it's sustainable from a physics perspective. But if, for instance, in Sweden, the Social Democrats needed the Green Party to form a coalition government to get into power. And in order to get them on their side, they had to shut down two reactors, which led to a shortage of power, and then they had to fire up the coal plants, which is way worse.
No, it's crazy.
So it's ironic, but as long as we have the kind of governing systems that we have, nuclear isn't that reliable, unfortunately. It's only reliable if privately run on a sound money economy. So yeah, after hyper-Bitcoinization, I'm all pro-Bitcoin, but not right now. but to emphasize on the important shit here, it's like all these green energy incentives and suspension mechanisms and all those narratives that you need to talk to academics, they're all nice and dandy. But the real kicker is that that Bitcoin is sound money. It's by its very nature it's better at relocating resources than the current destructive system that puts decision making in the hands of politicians that waste resources all the time and build shit that no one asked for. Ugly art, state funded media, all sorts of shit that
my favorite is all these NGOs. Those are my favorite non-governmental organizations that depend on all the money from the government.
It just
makes me laugh.
And as very few companies in the world have nothing to do with any government. You always have to please them somehow. And I just think we would have a better world and a less wasteful world if we had a type of money where people would focus on quality over quantity, which is what money with a fixed supply leads to. I think it leads people closer to an insight that my grandfather had, which is that which you can do without, you own. So if I don't crave a Lambo, I own all the Lambos because I own the urge. Like it's a mental thing.
Is this a famous Swedish
euphemism? He wasn't famous, but I've heard others say things, similar things. Naval Ravikant, for instance, believes this.
I love Naval.
And I think that the deeper we get into hyper-Bitcoinization, the more people are going to realize that they don't need all this frivolous shit that consumerism leads to. Like when you have inflationary money, you buy a lot of shit because that's what the theory is that is what drives the economy. When it's really savings and animal delayed
spirits. Sorry? You don't believe in animal spirits?
I don't believe, honey badger spirit.
That's what Keynes called it. Animal spirits. We need to stimulate animal spirits.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. I don't necessarily believe Keynes was a bad man, but he was definitely confused about certain things. And the whole theory so the Keynesian theory is basically this. I give you every time a $100 bill changes hands, new value is created because you create new shit.
Mm-hmm.
But that is, it doesn't take into account that it's not $100 anymore because it loses its value over time. So you create shit, but not shit that people actually wanted. You create shit that people, since the money is inflationary, they like to give it up. So they buy shit that they wouldn't otherwise have if the money had kept or increased its value.
I mean, well, it's a manipulation of the incentive structure. In the same way that, like they said, if you're, people behave differently if they know they're being surveilled in society. Have you looked at some of that data? Or like if you know you're being watched, you act differently. So
you don't need data for that. Yeah. Like the thing with human action is that empiricism cannot deny nor confirm any theory. It's just deductive reasoning all the way. Like you can say these things and they are absolutely true because they have to be, because arguing against them, you run into a contradiction. And of course, people's behavior change when the money is broken. Of course, people's behavior change if they're filmed all the time. I've seen it in my lifetime. Like the parties we had back in the 90s were better because people weren't afraid to make fools out of themselves. So we had much more fun.
Yeah.
We went skinny dipping way more often and stuff like that. Yeah. And, and something happened. And I think...
Mm-hmm.
As much as I like that no one is smoking in pubs anymore, smoking cigarettes in pubs anymore, because of course that's bad for everyone because of the health issues. But in losing that, I think humanity lost a bit of its rebel spirit.
Mm.
Everyone has been more obedient since. And maybe that's why the lockdowns were even possible, because people stopped rebelling against authority the way they did back when I grew up.
Man, I feel like if you're in Bitcoin, like you're just, for the most part, the exception rather than the rule, you're somebody who has always rebelled against authority. I know I was. I know that's just in my spirit, right?
Yeah. So punk rock.
Yeah.
But Bitcoin is punk rock. Andreas Antonopoulos said that at one point. Yeah.
It's an interesting rabbit hole to go down. I know I would talk to Dominic Frisbee about this, and he went to like Cuba, for example. And
so did I.
He basically said that the incentive structure of how broken the money was there, and like how they obviously it was all fake. There was the fake exchange rate, but he said something that just kind of like was just blew my mind, which was the most coveted jobs in Cuba are not like a doctor or a lawyer, but like actually, if you have a daughter, you push her to become a prostitute.
Yeah.
Because then she's closest to the money printer, which is the tourism that comes in with U.S. dollars.
Yeah, it's awful.
So it's like, could you imagine taking your bit? My like, I have a daughter, so it's like it just blew my mind. It was like, broke my heart. That's like, hey, your chance at having the best life is to be a whore, essentially.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, go.
So here's a couple of observations about Cuba. We visited Havana with the tall ship I worked on like 10 years ago, a lot, or 15 years ago. And I was there before Castro died, and the thing is, one example is that they have a cafe in the middle of Havana called La Cupola, where you can buy ice cream. And one of the first things Castro did with the communist regime was to say that, okay, now ice cream is free for everyone. So you get free ice cream. Talk about a handout, you know.
God.
So state-funded ice cream. So I go to this La Cupola place, because we wanted to see it. And there's a line of 200 Cubans waiting for their 40-cent ice cream. So if you had 40 cent, it still costed something, but very low price for Cubans. However, if you were rich...
It's free, but yeah, just kind of free.
Yeah, but everyone's equal and the pigs are a bit more equal than everyone else, the animal farm thing.
Yeah.
Because if you were a rich tourist, you could stand in a way shorter line and pay $4 for a cup of ice cream and you could bypass all the communism. And it paints such a good picture of what communism actually is. It's just a bigger... The lower classes are, there's just, there's no middle class. It's just the elites and everyone else poor as fuck.
Yeah, and it's a great animal farm.
And Swedes.
We're all equal, but some of us are more equal.
Yeah. And Swedes, of course, with growing up with propagandistic state-funded media, everyone loved Cuba because, like, there's a romanticism around Cuba, this little nation fighting big evil empire USA, right? So we went. Often we came from Cuba and went to Florida afterwards, or the other way around. And every Swede was tipping the waitresses in the U.S., but not in Cuba. Because they heard on TV that waitresses make fuck all in the US, so you have to tip them. But that didn't apply to Cuba for some reason. What do you think the waitress in Havana makes more than "Hi, I'm Amber" in fucking Miami? Like, are you kidding me?
Oh man!
But they just refused to see that, and this is while Havana is literally falling apart. Like 1,000 people per year die from the buildings collapsing on top of their heads.
That's unbelievable.
Because they have no maintenance system. Like no one has any incentive to do anything.
Somebody told me they went there and it was like they tried to order something at a restaurant and the person was just sitting there not doing anything and they were like rude. It was like just blew their mind.
Yeah, the trade embargo has done a lot of harm too. Oh, because that has put them in an even worse spot, of course.
Yeah.
Because there's the food is crap in Cuba. Like Cuban food in America is nothing like Cuban food in Cuba. Because they have no food. It's just rice and beans.
I'm going to take you to a Cuban restaurant. We're going to go to my favorite Cuban place. We got the best Churrasco steaks.
Yeah. And all the Cubans in Florida are super successful.
I know. It's crazy. Yeah. I mean, so, the Cubans are.
No.
Like the Cubans here, like. I think Miami just turned, it's a big city, but it just turned red. Like, I read, like, you know, usually cities are, like, super left-leaning liberal.
Oh, yeah.
We call blue and red. But
Yeah. And red, it's funny because in Europe, the colors are inverted.
Really?
The blue is right-wing and red is left-wing. Like, red, that's commie.
Really?
Red, you know?
Yeah. Really? Wow. Okay, that's funny.
So red state, like, it was confusing for a while, like, before I understood that.
Yeah. But Miami, I guess, has turned red, like with the Cuban population there that have fled the communism of Cuba. They're saying, are you guys out of your fucking mind? Fuck this.
Yeah.
You know, so it's pretty cool. Pretty cool.
Yeah.
It's a great place. It's a great time to be in Florida.
As long as they're not Tony Montana, I'm all for it.
Oh, man. All right. Let's bring this back to energy a little bit. I've always been fascinated by the idea that, you know, you work your labor, you're able to, like, getting money, getting paid for that is like you're storing the energy of your life, right?
Mm-hmm.
You give your energy and you're storing that in a money.
Mm-hmm.
It fascinates me that it's all of these ideas around energy. When we talk about Bitcoin, it's like it's this energy money that it's like really tied to energy. And then when you work the best money possible, for you to store your life energy in is this energy tied money.
From an autistic physics perspective, it's not energy because energy is very specific. It's joules, right?
But when you're working, you're providing your whether it's your joules of your brain or the joules of your action or whatever, you're being compensated.
It's a tool
for the energy of your life, I guess.
Yeah, it's a tool for keeping the fruits of your labor for yourself.
Yeah.
It's fruit that doesn't rot.
Oh, man. Before we close out this chapter, do you have any other thoughts on energy you want to share? Anything else? I know that since you wrote this book, you've come to certain different conclusions, or your ideas or philosophy has grown on some of these issues. What else do you want to add to put the cherry on top of this chat, of this
about
episode?
About energy? Yeah, I don't like the word digital energy because Bitcoin is neither digital, first and foremost, and nor is it energy. The digital part is not the important part. The important part is the finite supply and the censorship resistance. It's permissionless. So you can use it regardless of others' opinion of you using it. So let's focus on that. Calling it digital makes people confuse it for shitcoins primarily, but also like the dollar is digital. Every fiat currency is digital.
Yeah, people don't understand that.
No.
They think that, I can see it, I can do it. Yeah, a very small percentage of it you can physically see.
Yeah.
But the other 98%,
no,
like we talked about, is just numbers on a spreadsheet.
No, and if you want to make your Bitcoins physical, you totally can.
Yeah.
You just write down the 12 magic words and there you go.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right. I think that's a good stopping point, and we'll come back with episode 5.